Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me on this episode. My guest is Jeannie Clark. We discuss how she got the Lady Blossom name in WCW. We talk Chris Adams, Steve Austin, and much more. So stick around. That's coming up in just a few minutes. So once again, if you didn't catch this before, I've said this the last few episodes. At least till the end of the year, I'm going to have two episodes a week, so thank you to listening to this past Sunday's episode, where I had Jonard Soli on to look at the life and career of his father, Gordon Soli. It was a fun episode. I hope you enjoyed that. So, guys, I'm aware I've gotten off track with the AWA deep dives and the debut of the Stampede deep dive. I apologize for that. Guys, they're coming, I promise. I will get back on the regular monthly schedule very soon. Get back on that. I have just gotten off, you know, some short of some time and this and that to complete the research I wanted to do. Solely on me, no pun intended. My fault. I apologize. But again, the deep dives are coming. They are going to continue. No worries. Don't nobody fear any of that. But the next episodes and the debut episode of the Stampede will be coming very soon. So just stay tuned. All right, guys, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I will have my guest Jeannie Clark. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to the Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
Welcome, everyone, to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Jeannie Clark. Jeannie, how are you?
I am doing wonderful today, thank you. I have a few allergies. Please excuse my voice is a little bit
Sniffling.
Congested.
Yeah.
Congested.
There you go. That's okay. Well, let's dive in. Let's talk about your wrestling career. But you started in professional wrestling in 1979. Accompanying Chris Adams of the Ring in joint promotions there in England.
Right.
And what was the English wrestling scene like there? Because American fans may not realize the English scene. So what was it like at that time?
At that time, it was absolutely massive. Although I wasn't really particularly a wrestling fan, even as a teenager, all the places I would go, like if you would go in a pub or places, people would be talking about it. It came on a Saturday, Saturday afternoon. It was called World of Sport, and it was massive. Two characters, Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks, were like household names. Yeah. And I'd heard of them just because everybody knew them.
Yeah.
They would be more like crossover, where they would be on like game shows or talk shows outside of the industry, but I didn't know much more about it than that, except it was on a Saturday afternoon, and I think half the country stopped to watch it, so it was brilliantly, everybody loved it, although I personally didn't know too much about it.
Did you, during your time, did you encounter Big Daddy at all while you were working there with Chris?
Oh, yeah, I did, but way after I met Chris and started working in for World of Sport with Chris.
Yeah, he's a very divisive guy for fans, because especially like American fans, they don't understand how big Big Daddy was in England, right? I mean, he was it, right? He was a pop culture guy, not just wrestling.
Yeah, I suppose you would call him the Steve Austin or the Rock.
Yeah.
Of the Attitude Era. But yeah, he was. But his brother was also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The promotion. Max, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Max Crabtree. Big Daddy's name was Shirley.
Yeah.
Crabtree. And with your dad as the promoter, you know, give you that extra push.
Yeah.
People loved him. A lot of the guys didn't like him.
Yeah.
But the fans did.
Yeah, and you came to the U.S. in the early 80s with Adams. You guys started working for World Class, and you two had a daughter. You split up. You tell me about 1983.
No, you got that very wrong.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do I have wrong? What is it?
So what I meant was we didn't come over and start for World Class. We split up a long time before that. Came over. I just was just trying to make sure the timeline.
Of course. Yeah.
So Chris had met a guy called Yasu Fuji. Yasu Fuji was a judo guy. Chris was a judo guy. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, his brother,
Olympic
medalist.
Yep.
Neil. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Chris also won a lot of medals, but he wasn't quite Olympic. He was really, really good. If you made the Olympic team, you're obviously really good. So, but he didn't have that, what Neil had. So he wanted to get into wrestling. And when he met Yasu Fuji, he was a friend of two wrestling guys called the LaBelles, who ran out of NWA out at the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And through that connection, Chris and I in 1980, I think, 81, we got to Santa Monica. And that was 81. 82, the angle didn't start till 91. So there's a big 10-year gap there.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys had already split up before you came to the States, but you were still working together professionally.
We split up once in LA, but we got back together. We were together about 5 years, but we went up to Portland. And we split up in Portland when he worked for Don Owens. It was then a few years after that, I was in Florida, and he phoned me actually asking me if I would do this ex-wife angle. He had wanted to do it with Gina Hernandez at that time, but I didn't want to leave Florida at that time. So Baby Doll did that role. Then because we had a daughter together, Jade, we kind of, the thing with Chris and I, we split up, but we were very close. Our families were close. Like, I was very close to his mum and dad. And so we kind of had a brother, sister, a strange sort of ex relationship, if you'd like. And then he got Steve as a student, and he asked me again, this was for the second time, if I would come to Dallas to do the ex-wife angle. And that time I did. And that started in 91.
Yeah. Well, real quick before that, tell me, what is the deal with you? In 83-ish, I think, you married Billy Jack Haynes. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Tell me about that, because a lot of people don't think really know that you were married to Billy Jack.
No. So I have covered this story very small. I haven't really come out a lot, and I believe there's a bias coming up, so I don't want to say too much on that.
Sure, okay.
On him. The reason that Chris and I split up in LA and got back together is because Chris was a ladies' man. He had a lot of other women, a lot of other women. And obviously I was only, 22. So I did feel like I wasn't good enough. So I went through a really bad time. There was a time where Chris, bearing in mind, we didn't have phones back then, phones. We had to depend on the landline.
Yeah.
And many, many a time, 3-4 nights would go by and Chris wouldn't come home, but he was with a lot of different women, leaving me quite isolated because I didn't have any family. I didn't drive.
Yeah.
I didn't work, and I didn't have any money, and I was a single mom. So I felt quite isolated in Portland, and nothing I did, because I'd forgiven Chris before. Just one day I was at the apartment, and I think Billy was the one who said to me, "I really don't understand why Adams, this quote, cheats on you, you know, because you're a beautiful girl. And if you were a person like me who had been, I'd say dismissed, Chris avoided me, because of all the other women. I mean, I knew about all the other women because I'd already forgiven him. So it left me probably quite vulnerable.
Sure.
And Billy had said, you know, Chris had given him some, had told him, well, it's just like everything, you know, you can have steak every night, but sometimes you'd like a piece of chicken, or worse to that effect. And it really hurt my feelings. But Billy actually told me what I already knew. But there's always that 99.9%, and then you actually don't want to hear that. But he did say to me that I'll do anything to help you out. So I was very naive, very vulnerable. And I hadn't had somebody give me that kind of attention.
Sure.
So I did go with Billy, that's true. And I can honestly say I thought I had feelings at that time. Bear in mind, I was 22 and had been really neglected by Chris. So it didn't last. That relationship didn't last too long. Billy had a lot of secrets, and he told me to go back to England, and he went on to Florida, and Chris at that time went on to World Class. So sort of at that time, all three of us were separated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like you said, there's a lot to talk about with Billy Jack, but you say there's a vice thing. We'll table that. We'll let people wait. There's obviously a lot of Billy Jack Haynes stuff coming in the future. So we'll
move on. There is just now, but
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like you said, in the World Class thing, right, where you did the X thing with Steve Austin and Chris, part of it was Adam's wife at that time, Tony, became involved. What was it like working with her? Did you and Tony get along okay?
I did. I love Tony. A lot of people thought it was really strange. Even Jerry Jarrett was like, but Tony and I were really good friends. She and I could have been sisters. We were that close. And so working with Tony was great. Yeah, really enjoyed the angle. And then, of course, where Steve, Chris, Tony and I think it got really big, that angle. Matter of fact, a lot of people came. The building was filling up for that, and it was fun. Yeah. It was fun, yeah.
Yeah. And then after you and Steve moved on to the world, WCW, and you were brought in as his valet and given the name Lady Blossom. Now tell us this story. Yes. 'Cause I think you said Dusty gave you that name. Is that correct? How did that name come about?
Yeah, Dusty. I wish I'd had a name, 'cause I didn't love it. Yeah. He said I was blossoming. so.
Did
blossoming
it,
out of my top.
Yeah, physically, right? Yeah. Did it bother
you? And I think the lady part was probably because I was British.
Yeah. Did the name bother you that way with that? Because it's like, that's, you know.
No, not really. I mean, I didn't, a lot of the, because we were heels, they called me Lady Possum, which we all laughed about. I thought it was hilarious, but
yeah.
Oh, you know, what are you going to say? You've got the name is
sure.
A little bit like Stevie didn't like the ringmaster, did he? So,
no.
You know, so I guess the thing you need to do is be prepared and have a name. But yeah. Dusty gave me the job, gave me the name. I just said, okay.
Yeah. And that's how a lot of people, what they know you as, right? I'm sure you're probably, when you encounter fans, a lot of them probably still call you Lady Blossom. So it's kind of stuck. Yeah. And good or bad, it's there. But you guys worked in WCW, right? You played a big role in Steve's matches, right? You were very, you know, interfered a lot, very, very involved. Did you enjoy your time in WCW? Because it really seemed like you and Steve were clicking and having a good time.
Yeah, I did. It wasn't as easy going as working at the Sportatorium. At the Sportatorium, you know, everybody just kind of did their thing. There were more rules and I didn't get to talk as much. I did a lot of interviewing in world class. But yeah, it was a great experience. I wasn't there for long, but yeah. I don't regret it. It was a really good experience.
Yeah, it was.
Especially since I never tried to get in the industry. I had never trained. I just listened to orders. And
yeah, it was a very weird time in WCW, though. It's because they were trying to kind of find their way. It seemed like they were trying lots of different things. And I don't know, it was just very, there's a lot of good stuff there, but it's a very peculiar time for WCW. I don't know why. It seems, I don't know, like they didn't have a lot of focus.
Yeah, there were a lot of stuff going on. I think Steve got really frustrated.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting fired, didn't he? But then he went on to ECW. But I think they were trading from WWE at the time. And I think Hogan and coming in, maybe, I don't know. But there was just a weird atmosphere within WCW.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said you weren't there very long, but, and part of that is, right, you stepped away because you became pregnant again, right, with your second daughter. So you stepped away. And you and Steve were married for a while. You have two daughters. And you, like you said, you were with him with that part where he was frustrated, right? And he got fired. And then he went to ECW.
Yes, I was.
And and then went on to WWF with the Ringmaster, which you said he was also frustrated with. So what was it like? What was Steve like at that time? Because that's rough, right? Because obviously Steve had talent. Everybody knew Steve had talent. People were telling Steve he had talent. But yet he's getting, it's like he's not given a proper opportunity. So what was it like professionally being with Steve at that time? Because, I mean, that had to be very frustrating for him to go through. I mean, there's a lot there.
He was, and I think it showed in his ECW interviews he did for great, weren't they?
Oh yeah.
When he did Eric and he did Hulk, and bearing in mind when we first went in, they put the TV title belt on him and he was riding up, and then I think when other characters came in, he wasn't being used, and he got an injury, I think, in Japan. And then he got a phone call that he was fired. And then Paul Heyman obviously picked him up. But, I think he just had a vision of what he wanted. And just the black, the black trunks. And, he loved the Hollywood Blondes, though. He loved being part of that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because you could really tell. Yeah, you could really tell with him and Pillman. They were really, you could tell they enjoyed what they were doing, right? Because, you could just tell. So weird.
They just shut it down when it was going great.
Yeah, the politics are odd.
Which doesn't make sense.
No. No, but like we said, he went on to end up in WWE, right? He did the Ringmaster thing, which was whatever. But then he made the transition, right? He became Stone Cold, which almost immediately started catching. And you are credited with helping him with that persona and coming up with the nickname Stone Cold. I know you've told this story probably a million times, and I'm sure everybody's heard it. But for the sake, tell us one more time, because it's kind of an innocent way that it came about.
Yeah, we were just sitting on the couch, flicking the remote, changing channels, and the show about the Iceman. What was his name? Could you help me with that? Lewinsky or something? The show about the Iceman.
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ray or somebody, Lewinsky. Yeah. Anyway, he wanted to be a character like that, cold-hearted. And he went to Vince with that. But Iceman was already used by Iceman King Parsons.
Sure, yeah.
But he liked the idea of this guy who was called the Iceman. And then I think what happened was the office, WWE, faxed over all these ice or temperature base names.
Yeah, really weird ones.
I can't remember them all. I stagger. I do remember some of them. They were
yeah,
hilarious.
There was all, there was, yeah, there was like, I don't know, Chili McFree. There was all that, you hear all the kinds
yeah,
of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're really, really cheesy.
And I remember them coming in, and I remember Brian Pillman, being on the phone and speakerphone, and Steve had the list like this of the names, and they were in pure hysterics. I mean, it just, they couldn't believe how, you know, how bad the names were. And it really kind of was weird because one day I came in, Steve was sitting on the end of the bed, very pensive. He was thinking about this name, you know, looking at this. And I'm from England, so I drink tea. Mm-hmm. And I just said to him that, you know, don't worry about it. Drink your tea before it gets stone cold. And then I went, there's your name. And his eyes lit up, and then that's how it happened. Yeah,
it's so it's so funny how those things happen, right? Because I mean, the best gimmicks, the best wrestlers, it's just a spawn of themselves, right? So it was very natural, which makes sense. And I mean, literally, Stone Cold has become the biggest name in professional wrestling history, pretty much.
Yeah,
and there you go.
Great.
Just an offhand English colloquialism about tea is what it's so funny how those things happen sometimes. And
yes,
did you, because I also heard that you had a little bit of a hand in the Austin 316 catchphrase. Did you have anything to do with that?
I mean, I'm a Christian, and most people know that, because I don't really hide it on my Facebook, etc.
Yeah.
And I made a t-shirt, 316. Mm-hmm. And Steve goes, what is that, Master? It's just a verse from the mm-hmm. Bible. And he was like, that's pretty cool. So I don't know, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you kind of got the wheels turning. Of course, it's, again, another iconic moment in wrestling history, right? I mean,
the Austin 316.
Yeah, probably probably the best-selling T-shirt of all time. Oh. And
great.
So
is on that.
Yeah, it's so funny how
I would have said something.
Sure. Yeah. I
mean, I remember one of Vince McMahon's office people saying to me one day, "I bet you wish you got that." Yeah, you know.
Oh, well.
What do you call it when you get it where no one can use it?
Yeah, yeah, like a trademark.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah,
yeah, you get the property and
mm-hmm. Well, it's so funny how just a matter of time, Steve goes from being so frustrated, right, in this not seeing a future because he's being truly stifled, to being the biggest thing in professional wrestling, and getting that opportunity. That's all it takes, right? Is that opportunity, and he obviously made the most of it, right? Still does great for himself. But you and your daughter, you and Austin end up, you know, you split, and you end up going back to the UK, correct? And
yes.
So since then, I mean, how is your relationship? If you don't mind me asking, how's your relationship been with Steve since then?
I mean, I still have his phone number. We have children.
Sure.
I would never regret the relationship because I love our kids. The kids are talking to him. As they're over 18, it's not something I need to be involved in as much as when mm-hmm. they were minors.
Sure.
But I would say we were civil. Yeah, I'm not a bitter person. I don't hold resentment, so yeah, I'm cool with Steve.
Good. Well, in 2016 you released your autobiography through the Shattered Glass.
Yeah.
What at that time, what triggered you to think, hey, you know, this is time to write my autobiography and tell my tale? What inspired that at that time?
Totally inspired it was my drug addiction issues. Which I like to be really honest about, because I think that it is so important to know the horror of addiction and how it affects people, not just the person, but everybody around them. So I wanted to just say guilty. Let me tell you all about it and hopefully don't go down that road. Because I also worked after, I also worked as a counsellor and an advocate in several rehabs. at that time within the industry, obviously, you know, there was a lot of, excuse me, there was a lot of addiction going around. Obviously, we all know that, with the amount of people that died. And I believe I probably just felt really isolated. And it can creep up on you, addiction. I'm like in the 11th year now, clean.
Cool. Yeah.
But I wanted to be brutally honest. And write about the dangers of addiction. And I wanted to hopefully let people know that it's no, you know, easy ride, and not to take drugs. Of course, everybody has to make their own decision, but it always ends up three ways, really, which is, you know, jail, hospital, death, unfortunately, if it gets that progressive, and it is progressive. So
yeah,
I wrote the book as an autobiography through all my notes. So when I was in rehab, we would have a class 9 to 6, but you had to write down everything all day. So when I left rehab, I had like notebooks, like hundreds of notebooks. And then I thought this could make a really good book.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on your sobriety. Right. I know I've talked to many people. I mean, it's not one of those things, right? Addiction's not a thing where you're just, you do it and you're done. Right. It's an ongoing, every day, rest of your life. It's a choice, right? To remain sober. It's one of those things that's always there. And I've talked to a couple of guys that have also done that same thing, right? They've got clean and they've helped, right? They've counseled. It's very honorable that you guys do that, because, you know, it tells what could happen, right? And that's, you know, hopefully, you know, if you touch one person and can make a difference, it's worth it. And
exactly, just one person.
Yeah, and it's not easy, right, to bear yourself and be honest. You. Yeah, it's hard to be honest.
Well, I mean, you will get a lot of stigma and stuff like that, but I felt brave enough to say it how it was.
Yeah, and it can be
sugarcoat.
Yeah, well, it also sounds, I mean, like at least for you, that it was part of your healing process, right? It helped you to heal.
Yes, it was. Yeah, because I wrote everything down, and that in itself, it was very getting it out of your head and onto paper.
Yeah.
And the book, the only reason for the book was after rehab, because I left rehab and I started the book straight away.
Yeah, well,
and it helped because it took everything out of my head. And don't forget, you know, I'm going way back to childhood trauma as well. And then the trauma of being with a sex addict, as Chris was, and I'm not saying that disrespectfully, but it is true. And then through addiction myself, and so I gave back by helping addicts, and so I'm I'm probably feeling better now in my life than I felt for a long time. And I'm 65 now.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, that's great. Like I was going to say, I think, you know, you seem to be doing very well, right? You've got, you know, like you said, the two daughters that you have a great life with. You're doing, you know, you're starting to do some appearances. You're right. You've been doing some appearances. You've appeared on a couple of episodes of Dark Side of the Ring. And like you mentioned, there's some you recorded for some upcoming. Are you excited to kind of get out there and meet your fans and you're kind of getting back in the public eye with these shows and these appearances? Is that something that's exciting for you to get back in touch with that part of your life?
I sometimes obviously I don't get asked a lot because I wasn't on TV that much. So not a lot, if I'm being honest, not a lot of people know who I am, but, I'm going to be up for The Love of Wrestling. It's coming up in February. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to meet with old friends in the industry. Yeah, my daughters tend to like to go with me. So, yeah, I do. I will do a few. I'm not so many of them is because I live here.
In the UK. Well, yeah, and I mean that plays a part, right? You're not in the States, so you don't have the opportunity to do as many as some people.
Yes.
You mentioned in February for The Love of Wrestling. Tell me where is that? Tell us a little bit about that.
That's in Manchester in England.
Okay.
Okay. And that's the big show here in the UK. A lot of the Americans come in for it.
Oh, well, that's exciting. And Yeah, your book is still available, right? I'm sure you can get that online. And like you said, you're doing some of these appearances. You're available for some of these appearances. You are very active on social media. Like you said, you're very open about your faith. You're very open about your recovery and everything. So what is the best way for fans to kind of follow you and keep track of any potential appearances and things like that that you might have?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook the most. Jeannie Clark or Jeannie Williams. Mm-hmm. And if people would send me a DM, I tend to have to shuffle through them. But if I'm doing anything, I usually put a video up because I think it's just easier for me to put a video.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you say that a lot of people don't recognize you and that you were only in wrestling for a short time, but for that short time, you had an immense impact. If nothing else, for the Stone Cold thing, you had an immense impact on wrestling history for that alone. But I do think you're being
sweet.
I think you're being a little. Well, I think you're being a little humble. I think you're you were very talented, very good at what you did, and you had a short time, but you had a family, right? Like many working women, you had to find a way to try to balance, and unfortunately, you know, it is what it is. But
I like babies, so yes, I had three kids. I do remember being my last match being Halloween Havoc in '91, and on that, I can actually see a little bump, and I knew then because they had me taking bumps.
Yeah.
And I knew then, you know, I was pregnant and I was happy to be pregnant. So,
sure. Yeah.
And then I had Cassie, who's an angel. Yeah, I love my kids. I'm so grateful I met Steve. Honestly, I'm not going to say a word. And I don't say, and I'm not going to, because the fact is, you know, he gave me the greatest gift of all. My kids. So I'm very grateful to Steve. And I think he did a wonderful, wonderful, amazing job himself with his work ethic. And nobody's going to hear me say anything bad in front of my daughters about their dad. I'm always, call your dad or go see your dad. So I'm never going to be bitter or resentful. And I think he did a great job.
Yeah, I try not to focus on negativity in my interviews. I mean, It's hard with wrestling. You have to touch on certain things a little here and there, but you know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I try to, I don't know. I don't get caught up on that stuff. I try to focus on the positives, the nostalgic part, the part that makes us feel good, the part that we like, why we all love wrestling, you know, and that's what I, so.
And but you did do a great job.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you, Jeannie, giving me your time. I know, like I said, there's a big time difference between you and I. So it's hard to work these things out. You've been
A good time.
Well, it's a good time for me too. I'm a morning person, so this works very well for me. And you've been much more than accommodating, and I truly do appreciate it. And hopefully, maybe down the road when you start popping up on the Vice on the Dark Sides of the Ring again, maybe we can touch base again and talk about some of that and plug some of that and do it again. So
yes, I just want to say thank you so much for having me.
Well, absolutely. And thank you for coming on.
I've really enjoyed seeing you. I'm glad that we got the link to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's technology is great when it works, and then, but it's a hassle when it's difficult. But yes, thank you, Jeannie. Have a good rest of your weekend and stay in touch. Like I said, maybe we'll touch base and do a round two down the road.
All right. So thank you.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and thank you to Jeannie for coming on the show and talking to me. Like I said earlier, hopefully we can have her back on and chat some more in the future. What a great guest to have on. What a great conversation she is. Absolutely so honest and transparent and forthcoming with her, you know, her life and her career. And it's very refreshing, and it's such an honor to get to talk to her. Guys, make sure you follow me on X. I am there at the Dave Dynasty. That's the best way to keep track of me, everything I do, everything I post. Go check out the WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. Like I say every episode, guys, you want to do it, check it out. Subscribe to them all. You can go and look them up on your favorite podcast platform, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com to see all the information on the entire network. Right, guys, also make sure you subscribe to the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. They have lots of great footage, lots of stuff you're going to love to see, lots of footage that you've probably never seen before, or at least since it originally aired. They've got a new Andre the Giant special getting ready to come out. It is pretty awesome. I've seen it. It is so cool. So go subscribe to them now. You can go to the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library at classicwrestling.net, or you can download their app. Just look up Ultimate Classic Wrestling on all of your devices. Guys, I mentioned it earlier. Here we go. This coming Sunday, fingers crossed, the next episode will be the first Stampede Wrestling Deep Dive, covering January 1988. So be sure you subscribe. Check that out. Here we go. I'm hoping I can get this one out. I don't know why I shouldn't. That's the plan. So there you go, guys. My commitment to you to get back on track with the deep dives. So, all right. Thank you, everyone, for your listens, your support, your follow, and your interactions. Keep those coming on social media. Give me the feedback. Give me the responses. Give me the comments. Let's keep having discussions and supporting classic wrestling that we are all nostalgic for. So, guys, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.